It'll be first and 25.
This is First and 25, the Football Zebras podcast, our 25-minute roundtable discussion on officiating. And this week, we have the full Football Zebras crew. I'm Ben Ostro. I'm joined by Mark Schultz, Cam Philippe, Chris Soiber, and Pat Weber. So we're going to take a few quick takes from the crew. And, I'll kind of change up the order a little bit. And we'll go to Pat Weber, who usually bats cleanup.
Yeah, you know, I was watching the Pittsburgh Steelers-Cleveland Browns game, and early on there was a tight OPI call early in the game. A little bit controversial, but I thought it was correct. The receiver put himself in a spot where he knew he would hinder the defender, and hindered the defender led to a completion. I thought a very good call for offensive pass interference. And we've seen a couple of those around the league recently, and the offense is more and more pushing the bounds of what is legal to gain an advantage, and I think it's a good thing to see the officials tighten down a little bit on it, make sure the offensive advantages that we do see in the league currently don't get too out of hand. And then in the next play, we had a taunting call, which, again, I thought was clearly a correct taunting call, and I know a lot of people don't like seeing the tight taunting flags, but it was a good get, and it sets the tone early, especially in a rivalry game like that. And then on top of that, you have Tony Romo saying that the taunting call was a makeup call because he didn't like the offensive pass interference. And I cannot stress enough that makeup calls are not a thing in the professional level.
Yeah, because if you've made up a call, now you have two calls that have gone wrong. So that cannot possibly make it any better. And that's the other thing is that, yeah, he did not particularly like that. And there's a lot of people that said it wasn't very much or that there wasn't contact. I think there was some contact, but even at that, the disruption was fairly deliberate. And well, I mean, for those that say that, well, he's just running a route, how do you respond to that? If you're sitting on the sideline, you're Jeff Seaman, you got your flag on that, your hand on that flag, and you're ready to throw it. What are you seeing that is not running a route and more pass interference?
On that play specifically, you could see the receiver kind of break down and scoring up the defender and then last minute starting to run a route so he can claim innocence. But at the same time, the offensive players know where they're going and they have somewhat of a responsibility to avoid the defender because they know what they're doing and they're setting a pick on that defender to free up their teammate.
Right. So now the receiver is entitled to his route, but as you say, you're deliberately getting into the way and again, you know, moving towards towards the defender who has already one-on-one with another receiver, and then subsequently that receiver winds up being wide open. All the elements were there. It wasn't that, oh, well, he just kind of got tied up on there. It was a pick and they caught it early on. And as you say, sets the tone for that game because we don't want to see these things come up, repeatedly through the game. You start with these little maneuvers and then it just escalates from there. Let's spin the wheel. Let's go to Michigan. Let's see what Chris Soibert has to tell us this week.
Yeah. Speaking of offensive pass interference, we can go back to before Christmas when, again, the Lions, as always comes up, they were playing the Steelers and we were all chatting during this and it was a crazy final 2 minutes of that game. And Carl Sheffers and his crew, we have an article up on the website. We posted about this where we collectively all kind of gave our thoughts and we all thought that crew did a really good job in the final 2 minutes. And not to go over the entire discussion, but the last play was, I think, one of the more interesting plays. And again, bringing up the whole offensive pass interference thing. There was one earlier in the drive where Isaac Tesla did sort of a similar thing, I think, to Pat, the one you were alluding to, where, you know, it wasn't much, but he was clearly running his route deliberately to go into a defender. And I know there was a lot of discussion from sort of rules pundits out there as well, as far as, you know, did the defender lead him into that? But when you watch it, Tesla kind of almost lowers his shoulder, where I think if he had just run it and like almost stopped and turned to look for a pass, you know, faking it, I think he would have been fine, but he kept going through that. And that led to the final play where Amon-Ra St. Brown, again, just to make some space because the Lions had crawled, you know, clawed back from quite frankly, a big deficit where I didn't think they had a shot to win anyway. But he clearly pushed off, flags flew, and then, as Mark wrote, chaos ensued, where St. Brown threw a backward pass to, of all people, Jared Goff, who ended up running it in for a touchdown. But at that point, the time had hit zero. Carl Sheffers announced, a little bit clunky, but again, this was a very unique play, because only in the NFL, and Pat can jump in here on the NCAA side, but I know in high school, the Steelers would have had to accept the penalty in this case, and they would have had to run one untimed down. But in the NFL, when the offense just by themselves fouls on the final play of the game, there is no replay of the down. And Sheffers tried to announce that, and I think the Lions fans were confused a little bit because they thought they had a touchdown. But again, I think Sheffers' crew got everything right there. And it's just another very unique play where, not only in the beginning of the game, as Pat alluded to, but also at the end of the game, the entire crew needs to know exactly what's going on, how to enforce the rules, how to enforce penalties, and they did a bang-up job on this play.
Let's go to Cam and see what he's got this week.
Yeah, so I've got some involving the Lions, but from this past week, from the Christmas game, scandal gate, you know, rigged gate. Every year you have something coming up where everyone's saying, you know, the league is rigged, blah, 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 blah. And in case you were too busy having your Christmas dinner or late lunch at this time, there was a play about midway through the third quarter where the Netflix broadcast kind of had an ISO shot of the down box. It was a big fourth down play. It was a big fourth down for Detroit. And they happened to capture in that shot what we call the teal hat, which is one of the league game day assistants. The official title is the instant replay field communicator. Their primary responsibility is to be the communication link between the on-field crew and the replay booth. So they're an extension of the crew. And the field communicator in this circumstance, on this play, was giving the rolling fists signal that's indicative of a false start, a legal formation. And then they, you know, cut to the broadcast angle of the play, and Detroit committed a false start. So then there was a lot of things going on saying, oh, you know, this is rigged. Clearly they were signaling false start before the play even happened, blah, 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 blah. And then I was very happy to see a lot of keyboard warriors out there, you know, defending this, and happily seeing some officials or people that have at least some knowledge of officiating understanding what this was. And I got to be honest, I'm a little surprised we haven't seen this sooner, because you do see officials on the field give this signal as well. It's called a rolling fumble signal. And it's basically a way for the officials on the field to remind themselves on fourth down, because this was a play on fourth down, that the fourth down fumble rule is in effect, meaning only the fumbling player can recover and advance the ball for the offensive team. And even though this is not a rule at lower levels, this is still something we do at the high school level, at least in my neck of the woods. Instead of doing the rolling with the fists forward, we do them in reverse. And we basically are saying, you know, anybody, meaning anybody can recover in advance. So this is a common mechanic. You'll see it a lot on, especially on punts. A lot of times you'll see the referee and the umpire giving the rolling fist signal to signify this. This is where you see it the most. I've personally never seen a teal hat on the sideline do it on a broadcast. But since they're that extension of the crew, they're that link between the crew and the replay booth, they're following in the mechanics as well. They're linked up with the O2Os just as the officials are on the field. So scandal and not so scandal at the same time. NFL rigged, not quite yet. Can't prove it with this one.
And certainly not. And part of the reason is that you have each official, and that's in addition, it's a visual acknowledgement that you're in that mechanic, you're in that mode, you are you have that front of mind. It's not just a matter of oh, it's fourth down and this is what we do and just kind of, you know, breeze through it because that's part of your checklist. It's there to really anchor that in your brain. And sometimes we see that that's forgotten at all levels, all the way up to the NFL. You know, that those are in there for a reason, to make sure that you are doing and going through all of these items rather than just kind of doing the motions of this. So it's a very important part of it. The replay official is also part of the crew. And so the replay communicator that's on the field is now giving that visual reference from the replay official. And that's the other thing, is it's also a reminder if somebody gets caught in between running off their checklist pre-snap, now they see one of their colleagues doing that rolling signal, oh, engages the brain as well. So it's not only a visual reminder to yourself, but it's making sure that that gets out to the rest of the crew. And then, of course, when it shows up on film, you have acknowledged to your supervisor that you have implemented that mechanic and you are aware of it.
And you took the words right out of my mouth. It's all about that pre-snap routine. Because I know I'd seen one comment, and I kind of understand this, saying, you know, in the world where the officials are mic'd up with each other, in the world of O2Os, why can't they just get on the O2O? Why do they need the visual signal? And again, it goes back to the pre-snap routine. It goes to making sure that all seven officials and the two in the replay booth and those game day assistants that are linked up with the crew on the field are all on the same page. And it's, you know, going to do a lot more help by making sure, if you're a white hat in your position, being able to glance quickly around to see six other people on the crew on field giving that signal is a little different than just saying it once over the O2O and hoping everyone else hears you. So yes, we're in the world of technology, but even those hand signals are still very important for that pre-snap routine and making sure we don't miss something.
Getting that feedback as well. So Mark, let me throw it over to you. What did you see over the past couple of weeks?
Dominique Pender, side judge, NFL. Learn that name. He's number 114 in your programs, and he is a up-and-comer in the NFL. This past weekend, he officiated the Giants versus Raiders game, and there was some extracurricular activity as a gunner was blocked out of bounds. And not only was he blocked out of bounds, he was blocked all the way over the benches and back to the wall. Pender hung in there and called the play he needed to call. And then, in a very rare situation, the TV camera had an isolated shot of Pender sprinting down the sidelines, going into the bench area, climbing up over the bench, and jumping into the fray. There was one Raiders player versus the entire New York Giants team on that sideline. And he and his fellow officials soon joined the action and got everybody peeled off and headed back in the right direction. This is the second time this has happened to Pender, where he's had to go into a bench area and rescue a player. There was another personal foul earlier in the season, and the player was back all the way into the bench. And Pender actually went in there and shielded the player that the opponents wanted to give a beating to. The man knows what he's doing. So remember him. Lots of hustle. Lots of good game sense from Pender. So I envision him working some more into January and maybe this year, even February. One postscript to that Raiders and Giants play. That play went so far out of bounds, the two wing officials on that sideline had to keep their eyes on the field to watch the play. And then there were about 15, 30, 45 players separating them from the scrum that was happening. It was very hard for them to see exactly what happened to throw any flags. But cameras picked it all up. And unlike junior high school games, and even small college games that aren't on TV, the TV cameras picked it all up. And if the NFL deems that there need to be fines, I'm sure that they will happen.
And just to wrap up, a couple of people that I want to make, you know, send out a, an attaboy to. We mentioned on a previous episode about a play between FSU and Clemson, where the runner was going down the sideline, was tackled, but went over his tackler, never touched the ground, and the wing officials kept the play going, and it was a touchdown, and we rack it back and take a look at it, and sure enough, nothing touched the ground. At the time, we weren't entirely sure who it was, so I just wanted to give credit where it is due. It was Field Judge Rick Santilli and Side Judge Kip Johnson from the ACC that were completely on top of that. No early whistle, nothing that killed a spectacular play. And it just goes to show that you have to expect the unexpected. And as we said, slow whistles are good whistles, because you're taking in the entirety of what happened in front of you. When you see that runner land back on his feet, now you're saying, did I just see what I saw? And in that time, you've just replayed it five times. And but we've seen so many times where that has been pulled back and could have been broken for a spectacular touchdown. In this case, both the runner and the wing officials, you know, get the highlight for this particular play. So we are heading towards the end of the regular season in the NFL. We got bowls going all over the place. We have a first round of the college football playoffs in the book. We have the semifinals are now coming up this week on New Year's Eve, New Year's Day. So there's so much football that's footballing. So we got to figure out what we're watching on any given moment. But as we enter the final week of the regular season,
we got a couple. And there are some things that are
going
games.
To be for bids for
Steelers. Steelers Ravens for sure. That'll be a good one on Sunday night.
You know, there are going to be some key matchups, and you know, there's others that are just going to be, you know, well, there's nothing at stake, so it's going to be a coast. So get a set for week 18. What are we looking
Sean
at?
Sean Smith is the referee. Very strong white hat. I think one of the best of on the younger, you know, I'd say younger side, but outside of, you know, the Vinoviches and the Cheffers, I think Sean Smith is one of the better ones in the league, who's going to be around for a while. And I think we'll have multiple Super Bowls before it's all said and done. And it should be, he'll be in charge on Sunday night. And I'll be excited to watch that.
So obviously when they made the assignments, they were, they do have to give them a couple of weeks in advance. Week 18 does come a little bit later than the rest of them, but I do think that however lead time that they had, they looked at, okay, here's an AFC North matchup. This is going to be something. Seahawks, 49ers, something's going to be at stake. Bill Vinovich is on that game. No surprise there. So, and as you say, with Sean Smith, maybe we stick with him for a little bit. I definitely have seen a lot of improvement over the years. You know, when there's that breaking in period, they say it's 5 years. It's probably a little less now, but you know, he originally
was
started an umpire.
Predicted pick last year
kind of puts you a little bit out of position.
And something else that I wanted
from
to
what
know
you're used to,
as
either,
you know, that
white hat or a downfield
looms,
position,
and it's just going to be so much harder this year to make,
you know,
predictions.
He
now
got that,
and maybe we'll get into
caught
that
on
next
and
week.
You know, then we had a whole bunch of retirements,
just a little tidbit, and again, a lot of the assigning, I don't want to say it's completely random,
and
but
has been,
you know, Sean Smith is working game 272. He also worked game number
one. For the last several years.
He worked the opening game this year.
I would say he's a good contender
in Philadelphia. So, you know, that's
assignment this year.
Something interesting. I did see a comment earlier today saying, do the crews get assigned based on games with implications? And specifically, there was a sub question that said, do lower performing crews get games with no implications? And I kind of want to go back to what you said and debunk that in a way, because the league doesn't really know the implications until all of week 17's games are over. So it's not something that can truly be predicted. But like you said, Ben, if you're seeing a game in a division that's highly contested, you may see someone, you know, like a Bill Vinovich, a perennial favorite for late January, early February games, getting those assignments. But again, I wouldn't say it's the same for the reverse of, oh, you know, these two teams were eliminated. Let's just say that's one of the, I don't know. I'll say Kansas City and Las Vegas because that was a surprise this year to many. Those two teams had been eliminated from playoff contention a couple weeks ago. Are we going to put a weak crew in there? I'd hedge a guess to say that that's not the case. The league believes they have the best officials. They want to put out the best crews out there for the best games. And I don't think playoff implications are going to have a huge impact on assigning procedures. But again, that's up to the vice presidents, Ramon George, and the crew up at AMGC. And you know, that's their decision. But from a civilian eye, I wouldn't say that that's really a true thing there. But, you know, Sean Smith, I'll echo the praise about him. Maybe this year will be his year, Super Bowl 60. It's still crazy to say Super Bowl 60. I said that yesterday, so I don't know if anyone else feels that as a little aside as well.
The first Super Bowl I remember truly following was Super Bowl 13, and I don't want to subtract 60 from 13, and that's going to make me feel old. I started at Super Bowl 13.
Well, yes, for somebody 60? Who
holy cow,
had to count things where there were like two or three letters and they all started with X, you know, for most of their growing up time. But I'll let Mark kind of chime in as the elder statesman as well. So one of the things we did see is that a lot of the old criteria went away. I mean, we still do not have first year officials or first year referees in. You can't repeat a Super Bowl assignment in consecutive years. But after that, Ramon George just said, you know what? I'm putting my best person in there. And, you know, maybe you have a game that's a wild card game. That's going to be a much harder one to officiate than a conference championship game, which gets all the glory. When you have a 7 that's going up against a 2, that 7's got to
tell you
make
right
a
now,
statement.
If the Bears and Packers
and so
face each
scrappy,
other in a wild card,
and they're
going
to do whatever they
going
can
to, get
to win.
Highly
and
rated
they're going to push the envelope.
On
and
that
2 is going to be careful
because
we're going to
Packers and
the
Bears
playoffs here,
is personal.
And we have to, you know, get past this this little speed bump here and not get caught into a trap. So maybe you put an official on a game that you don't think is going to be high impact in Week 18. Because you're going to slot them in for one of those rough and tumble wild card games, Mark. And that's the thing; it's only going to show up as a wild card on their resume. And I say only, but you know they can advance from any round now. We've seen that as well. So basically, we're getting to the end here, and now this is what it's all been working towards. You know, those have. That have, you know, put in their time this year and they've been watching over various things. I know that they're kind of watching grades a little bit, but, you know, it there's a lot of intangibles that come in there. And it basically comes down to what Jerry Seaman said is, who do you want to go to war with? And so in this case, you know, you're going to have Ramon George. He's going to assign his 7 best that he thinks for each contest, and he's going to have a field of alternates that are going in there, and getting an alternate is not something that should be looked down upon. It's you were maybe a grade point, you know, a tenth of a point, a hundredth or thousandth of a point.
Congratulations
away. And,
in advance to
you know,
any
they need somebody on that
working their final game.
Something happens, somebody's got to go in.
And congratulations
the,
on a great career.
With the 50th anniversary
them,
of Hail
we'll
Mary.
Let you know.
You know, Armin Terzian called that a touchdown, and then minutes later, a half-empty bottle of Corby's whiskey beamed him in the head and knocked him unconscious. And you had, what was it, Charlie Musser came in and did a snap or two and collected a game check out of that. Any final thoughts to throw in there? And with that, we end another First and 25 podcast. My thanks to Mark Schultz, can't believe Pat Weber,